In school board meetings across the country, some parents are pushing for more control over what schools teach and how they teach it. Many of those parents have focused in on how schools teach about race and a variety of concepts that have been labeled as critical race theory. But education experts say there are some big practical issues with letting parents decide what schools do and don't teach, and educational issues if kids aren't exposed to different ideas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much say do you think parents should get when it comes to how teachers teach their children? How should teachers navigate a situation where some parents support teaching about a topic but others don't? Are you seeing these kinds of issues and debates coming up in your community, in your school district, whether you're seeing it as a student, a parent, a teacher or a school board member, or an interested member of the public? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jack Schneider is an education historian and associate professor at the University of Massachusetts Lowell School of Education. He also co-hosts the education policy podcast, Have You Heard? Jack, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
You've worked in the education field for some time now. What are you making of this, what appears to be anyway, a backlash we're seeing against some schools around the country right now?
Well, on the one hand, it's completely predictable that backlash is nothing new in American politics. It's not even new in the educational sphere, where we often see politics held at bay somewhat by the fact that, you know, 90% of the kids who are in schools in this country are in public schools. And so we all have...
I think we lost Jack. Do we still have you on the line, Jack? Looks like we've lost him. We're talking to Jack Schneider from the University of Massachusetts Lowell School of Education, looking at backlash to schools and debates in districts around the country. I think we have you back. Jack, pick up if you can where you left off. Nope, not there. Well, I'll remind you, you can call in at 800-642-1234 if these are issues you're seeing in your own schools, in your own community. What do you think about the idea of parents getting a say in what is taught, how it's taught, how direct a say should that be, or is the ability to elect or unelect school board members enough? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I just heard a click there. Does that mean we have our guest? Nope. Okay. Well, let's take a break now. We'll get this all sorted out and hopefully come in. You can again join in at 800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We'll have another go at our conversation about parental rights and education and a look back at other times we've seen backlashes against schools through history. We've got Jack Schneider with us, education expert at the University of Massachusetts, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jack, I you're back with us. I apologize. That was all on our end. Let's pick up again with your thoughts on this current backlash we're seeing here.
Sure. Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, it was easy to anticipate that there would be some sort of backlash, even if we couldn't imagine exactly what the nature of it would be. And even if it wasn't possible to assume that it would happen in the schools, right, that the schools, because people of all political persuasions have their kids in public schools, have often been immune to some of the broader culture wars that we've seen repeat over and over in American history. But that hasn't always been the case. We definitely have seen culture wars spill into the schools and play out in ways that caused a lot of turmoil. The one that listeners may be most familiar with is the conflict over the teaching of evolution in the early 20th century, although listeners are probably equally familiar with the fight over desegregation in the mid-20th century. So this is nothing new in terms of culture war pouring into the schools, this claim about having a right to determine the way that education is being delivered to particular children is also not new. And it's also not new that, you know, this kind of what Richard Hofstadter called the paranoid style in American politics, this kind of paranoid approach that is really designed to gin up resentment among conservatives and Republicans is also something that we've seen before, where the resentment against an inflated enemy, you know, an imaginary boogeyman who may be a communist or a Marxist or, in this case, you know, a Black Lives Matter protester, right? Because so much of this is about race. If you can exercise the imagination of conservatives and convince them that there is some vast conspiracy that they need to fight against, it can be really helpful for turning people out for elections.
Let's flip things around. Is there a better constructive way to say, hey, we have this topic of race in the United States? It's a messy topic. There's a lot of bad stuff to talk about. How can we bring the community together and talk about this, engage with it in a constructive way to figure out how we talk about this in our schools?
I think it's really important first to remind people that our schools are public schools. They aren't free schools. There's a difference between free and public, right? You can have a free private school that caters to every individual parent's wishes. Public schools are responsive to the public. We fund them with our tax dollars, and there's a reason that we do that, because they are designed to serve the public good. The original motivating impetus behind a nationwide system of public schools, free and open to all, regardless of paperwork, was democratic equality, preparing young people to participate in a democratic society. And I think if we can all accept that, then maybe there's some room to accept the fact that schools should, right, they have a responsibility to expose young people to ideas that we ourselves may not be entirely comfortable with, we may actually oppose, and that that's actually a part of preparing them to participate as equal members in a democratic society where they're going to encounter those ideas, like them or not.
On a practical level, I remember back in my school days, there were concerns from some religious communities about topics they didn't like being on the curriculum. There was also, just after I graduated, a minor blow up in my school district where an atheist parent had challenged the inclusion of talking about religion in American history. In a situation like that, with the idea of parental control, how do you decide which parents in a case like that to listen to?
Well, if parents had total control over the curriculum, we would see these kinds of conflicts over and over, right? Not just over religion, over any issue that had become politicized. And this is why parents do have the right to opt out of the public education system. So this is well established, right? You can go back to the 1925 Supreme Court case, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, that if parents have deeply held religious beliefs, and it could be motivated by something other than religion, but that case was about religion, then they can opt their kids out of the public system. But the schools that are funded by taxpayers for the purpose of strengthening a democratic society cannot cater to the individual, potentially idiosyncratic views and worldviews of populations that, you know, in many cases, don't hold every member of our society in equal esteem and respect, right? That we want our schools to be places where everybody has what scholar Siegel Ben-Porath refers to as dignitary safety, right? Everybody's dignity needs to be assured in the schools. And that's something that I think we've done a pretty poor job of making clear, that much of what is being treated as the politics of race is actually about assuring the dignity of young people who have been racially minoritized and racially marginalized over the years. But while we're assuring their dignitary safety, nobody's intellectual safety should be secured. That's a big part of what schools do, is expose people to new ideas and new beliefs, and they don't have to adopt them. And in fact, they go home to families that in many cases actively work against the things that kids have learned in schools, and that's okay too, right? The point of all of this shouldn't be to ensure that everybody in America, every young person in the schools, ends up agreeing with one side or the other. You know, there's historian John Zimmerman's famous quip about how, you know, it can't be that as long as there's open inquiry and dialogue and debate that you're going to end up agreeing with me. right? We can't hold that belief. We have to be open to the possibility that there will be disagreement and that people won't side with us when they're exposed to all the facts. And we have to remember that parents and families have tremendous influence over young people. And it's very rare that, you know, schools end up completely turning a young person against the beliefs and values that they're exposed to at home.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Chad is with us in Minnesota. Chad, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Chad?
Just everything as far as critical race theory, and I'm just, this is my exposure, and I'm a senior in Weber State in Utah. But everything that I've been exposed with critical race theory and everything I've heard, not an expert, people are misinformed as far as what critical race theory is. Everybody's just basing it off of, from what I've read, it's being pushed that this is just coming at the college level and being pushed at the lower level. There are ideas that need to be exposed to, but unfortunately, a lot of people are just viewing it through race, it seems like, and just picking pieces of critical theory and pushing it off as another. And I do believe that, like I'm spacing as Amy was talking, everybody has to be having conflict of ideology, and that society is based on that. But some people are just not willing to hear another side, and that's also where another disconnect is.
Chad, thanks.
Both parents and all them.
Thanks for the call, Chad. First of all, the definition of critical race theory, Jack, very much varies depending on who's, I guess, doing the talking and what agenda they're advancing when it comes to schools.
Yeah, absolutely. An important point there, that critical race theory comes out of legal scholarship in the 1970s and 80s. You know, go read Kimberly Crenshaw if you want to read some of that stuff. But right now, really, it's a kind of generic catch-all. And I think it's really because those are three things that Americans generally don't like, right? Critical, that sounds bad. Race, Americans generally don't like talking about race. And theories for eggheads like me, right? Americans are disinterested in that. And so you've got a linguistically convenient phrase that you can apply to any discussion of race that is making white people uncomfortable, which happens to be a lot of the conversations about race. You know, factually grounded conversations about race and racial inequality. And I think we need to, on the left, those of us who have been making the case that, you know, this isn't critical race theory being taught in the schools, we need to stop being so naive, right? That's not really what the right is arguing. And folks on the right need also to be a little bit less naive and recognize the fact that, you know, it is politically convenient to stoke outrage on both sides, but in this case, it's the outrage of white conservatives that's being stoked, and that they ought to be attuned to the fact that, again, it's politically convenient for the Republican Party at this moment.
Thanks for the call, Chad, at 800-642-1234. Let's go now to John in Madison. John, hi.
Hey, guys. Say, all due respect, I think your guest is really verging on some intellectual dishonesty here. There is a difference between teaching a theory, or such as Marxist economics as opposed to Keynesian economics, critical legal studies as opposed to law and economic studies. There's a difference between teaching a theory and viewing something and teaching a view through that theory. It's one thing to teach critical race theory as this is a theory of how one understands the structural problems and legal constitution and property rights and all of that stuff. And that is one way to look at this problem. There's other ways. There's other theories about it. It's one thing to do that, but it's another thing to teach history through that lens, to teach racism, race issues through that lens and say, well, that lens is the reality. So there is a distinction. Happy to teach all sorts of theories. I've got two high schoolers. I'd love them to be exposed to all the stuff I was exposed to.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Jack, what do you think of his point that it's one thing to say we are teaching you about these tools that critical race theory might bring to the table? It's another if we say we're going to teach race informed by critical race theory as the way to understand it?
I think the most important thing to remember here is there are 13,000 school districts and 100,000 schools in the United States. And so it is impossible to say anything about what's happening everywhere or even in most places, that it really varies from place to place. Now, are there some places that are teaching a particular understanding of American history, right? The caller's question was primarily about history, so let's stick with that. Are there places that are saying, we're going to apply this particular lens to history in our school or our district? Sure. And there are equally places that don't understand that they're applying a particular lens or a particular theory or a particular worldview or a particular ideology to the teaching of history, who are doing the same. And I think that any scholar of the teaching of history or social studies, and there are many of them out there, would tell you that it's essential to be putting in conversation these various interpretations of history, right? There is no neutral interpretation of history. There's no entirely factual presentation of history. History is about the interpretation of the past. And we interpret it through values, beliefs, ideas, worldviews. And the caller's not wrong, right? That absolutely does happen, and that it's important to expose young people to different ways of understanding the past. So if somebody's out there teaching, you know, Howard Zinn and nothing but Howard Zinn in the history classroom, there's an opportunity being missed there. And young people are actually being poorly prepared because they aren't going to come out of that classroom able to understand, okay, well, here's one interpretation, here's another interpretation of history. Let me try to put them in conversation with one another, and let me try to figure out what I think about all of this, right? So there's great opportunity for critical thinking when we put different kinds of interpretations of the past in conversation with one another, and that's actually what I hear most history educators talking about what they do in their classrooms.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Jack Schneider, education historian at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. Let's go back to your calls now. Jerry is with us in Madison. Jerry, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that the African-American Jewish Friendship Group has sponsored a bill, along with State Representative Lakeisha Myers of Milwaukee, to, it's called the African-American History Education Act. And the purpose of it is to educate all students in the state of Wisconsin as to the truth of American history and infuse African-American history into it so that the good and the bad of our country's history is taught to all students. And all students will benefit from learning the truth rather than trying to ban certain types of events, for instance, the Tulsa Massacre, which is 100 years ago, should have been taught all along to students so they would be aware of the truth of that.
Jerry, thanks for the call. I want to bring our guest into that, Jack. What do you think of that idea of it would be a statewide law, a mandate requiring the teaching of African-American history?
You know, the teaching of African-American history is something that is critical in our history classrooms, and it's being done all across the United States, and that it's not actually a new move. In the early 20th century, there were school districts, Chicago being one example, that began integrating Black history into the city curriculum. Philadelphia made bold moves in the late 20th century in this regard. The fact that we need to continue to make this case, I think that's what tells us something about the level of comfort among the white majority in this country around the teaching of the past in a way that directly addresses race. And I think, you know, there isn't an easy way out of this because it's an uncomfortable history that makes a lot of people feel like they are being threatened in some way by addressing this past directly. We have to do it, but I think there's a way that we can do it without necessarily alienating people who are uncomfortable around this. So I don't think that this is a simple case of one side being wrong and wants to ban books. The other side is on the side of justice. I think that to some extent, that's the story here. But I think it's also the case that, you know, as that earlier caller mentioned, these different viewpoints need to be put in conversation with one another. And I have great faith in the American people, in as much as I believe that if they have time to talk with each other, and that certainly is something that schools give us, right? 180 days for young people to sit around talking with each other. And if they are guided by an expert, we have that in this country. We've got 3 million trained teachers who are in charge in our classrooms. And if we can trust our democratically elected school boards to oversee this process, and that's another critical piece here, right? When people are making the parents' rights argument, they're forgetting that they do have a say over what's happening in the schools. We all do. Right? Our school boards, which oversee our public schools, are democratically elected. It's their job to respond to the public desire and the public demand. So I believe in deliberation. I believe in contestation, as long as, again, we're assuring everybody's dignitary safety. I believe in the marketplace of ideas. And I particularly believe in young people. And so I've got faith that if we are open to the possibility of disagreement in our schools, and if we trust professional educators, and if we participate in the democratic process, that we're going to get there.
Jack, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jack Schneider, education historian and associate professor at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, also co-host of the education policy podcast, Have You Heard? He was with us today for a look back at the history of backlashes against schools and the latest over parental rights in education.